Hello, and welcome to BJGP Interviews. I'm Nada Khan, and I'm one of the associate editors of the BJGP. Thanks for taking the time today to listen to this podcast. In today's episode, we're speaking to Ewan Lawson, who is the editor-in-chief of the BJGP. We're going to have a chat about a number of issues around the future of the journal, around editorial issues, and how you can get involved with the BJGP as well. So, hi Ewan. Nice to see you. And just wanted to really start by saying thanks for joining me here today for this podcast. Thanks for joining me here today, Ewan, just to have a general chat about things going on with BJGP and your role as editor. And yeah, just a chance to catch up about some of your thoughts about issues around academic publishing, and then just have a chat generally about other things that you've been thinking about as editor. So how's your week been?
We've already had that conversation before we got here, Nada, and we won't go there again. As you know, it's not been perhaps my ideal week, but I'm delighted to be here and talking a little bit about what's going on with the journal and just give a little bit of insight into how things are going. Perhaps the biggest thing that we're I've recently written about the impact factor at the journal, and perhaps the most important thing I need to say is that we don't worry too much about the impact factor. I know we do quite well on the impact factor, but I wrote an editorial which really pointed out that we're much more interested in the real world influence of the journal rather than what is quite a narrow metric about citations. We're more interested in how it affects clinical, how the journal articles affect clinical practice, how they affect policy. And we're really trying to push in that direction. And once we get into worrying about the impact factor, and there are a lot of perverse kind of incentives in academia, and it can sometimes result in what's known as questionable research practices, and things can just slide away from the ideal a little bit. So that's perhaps one of the things that we're trying to concentrate on most in this coming months and years, is just making sure that we keep our impact all about real world rather than anything else.
Yeah, you mentioned questionable research practices, and you did talk about this in your editorial or your editor's briefing. But how do you think the journal can tackle that head on?
It is challenging, because it's the thing about QRPs, questionable research practices, is that there's a spectrum, and they go from really very minor stuff, which is like, you know, giving your professor in your department authorship on a paper where they really didn't do anything, to a kind of the far end of the spectrum where you start to creep into outright research fraud. And most researchers, and I think particularly in the primary care field, though, you know, one has to be careful about making assumptions, have bags of integrity and do the best they can, but they're working in pressurized systems. And sometimes the QRPs are just things like that can be about the authorship, or it can be about declarations of conflicts of interest. It's how we go about doing our work in terms of how we quote other papers, or sometimes it can be a little bit about how we tweak results to try to get positive results out because they're more likely to be published. And those are perhaps the areas where, as a journal, we can be a little bit more helpful in that, you know, making sure we are quite happy to publish negative findings. We don't overstate results. It's very easy as a journal to take a paper, and there's a, you know, you want a brief summary of it to explain it to people, but it's important that we don't overstate and overinflate results that result in inaccurate messages going out about those papers. So they're the kind of areas we can help, but let's not be under any illusions. It's a systems kind of problem. Yeah. Academic departments and the culture they have, and the whole system of getting grants, publishing, how those then get disseminated in the media as well. So it's a big old complex beast. And I think we just try and look at the areas where journals may have an impact, and we're trying to push things in the right direction.
Fair enough. And you mentioned impact, and I just wanted to touch here on the BJGP Research Conference next year, which is going to have a focus on impact. So talk us through what we're doing there and sort of what your aim is really to get that focus for the conference next year.
Yeah, I think one of the things I've always been keen on the BJGP Research and Publishing Conference is that it's very much just, you know, it's a little bit something that we want to offer more for the community, particularly early career researchers and academics, but any GP that's got a scholar or primary care person, clinician that's got an interest in sort of the scholarly aspects of work and understanding a little bit more about that. So we're a small, friendly conference. I certainly had some feedback recently that someone was happy that they had had a really great experience and found it very welcoming. And I was really, I felt really pleased about that because that's certainly what we're aiming at. And this year, the theme is a little bit around impact and influence. We're very lucky to have a couple of speakers who really know about that. We're going to have Rebecca Payne, who's a GP, former chair of RCGP Wales. And also we're going to have Prof. Martin Marshall, who was former chair of the college, of course, during COVID and is now over at the Nuffield Trust. And I think that's a really interesting perspective because the think tanks like the Nuffield or the King's or, you know, the Health Foundation, others that are around, have an enormous understanding of how to influence policy through research. And we're hoping that'll be really useful for people and give them an understanding. What we see a lot of is that people do the research, but often, and everybody knows you have to do something to try to make your research, everyone wants to get the research out in the world, but far too often, and again, this is part of the way the system is set up, people just stop at that point and nothing further happens beyond that. And there's so many opportunities and so many ways that you can actually develop that. So we want to try and help people a little bit with that.
Yeah, and we've talked a bit about that, just in terms of actually the impact of research and disseminating the results that actually makes an impact. And I think that's going to be an interesting angle to get from Martin, especially from his perspective as well.
Yeah, it'd be good to see. And we should point out, you know, the last few years, all of the research in the journal is open access. So it's not paywalled at all. And we're having conversations about reducing paywalls across the journal as well. So that's in development. But, you know, yeah, we're keen to make sure that we're trying to do our bit. It's important that stuff just doesn't disappear into the journal. There's a slight risk of that. Perhaps some of my favorite moments as editor in the past few years have been when I've heard about papers that have changed practice and policy. The very obvious one being the Sandvik paper about continuity, which has been really picked up in government level, particularly I know in Scotland, they're pushing hard on that. But also when we hear from people like NB Medical or Red Whale or the other RCGP essential updates, when they take our papers, and they're part of, they look obviously across all journals, but when I hear about our papers that are then really being translated into actionable clinical findings, they're perhaps some of my best. That's why I really love seeing that. I think that's really where we want to be and what we want to be doing.
Yeah, and we've been talking about the clinical practice and analysis papers in the BJGP. And we've often reflected on the fact that some of those papers are some of the most read papers across the journal as well. I'm remembering the one about earwax from a couple of years ago.
I was thinking earwax as you were speaking.
Yeah, fair enough. But I think it's important to think about how we can promote other writers and clinicians, primary care academics, to submit those articles to us. And I don't know if you just want to give a plug for those articles and how we use them.
Absolutely. I'd be delighted to receive many more submissions around clinical practice. I think the key thing about this is almost all the academics who do anything related to clinical could write a clinical practice article almost next week because they're subject area experts. But there are many GPs out there who've got a special interest, well, not just GPs, but any clinicians who've got a special interest in an area could write incredibly valuable articles that would change people's practice. I think the thing about clinical practice is they're relatively short, sharp articles. But the ones that have worked really well are, you know, the earwax one.
Yeah.
We saw an incredible number of downloads for that. I mean, I think there are some niche areas where people just don't get their education anywhere else. So they're incredibly useful. We tend to try to tilt clinical practice, and I'm not sure this is written down in the author guidance, but it's worth flagging it towards kind of when we have the ideal reader in mind, we perhaps think of the more experienced GP mid-career onwards, who knows their way, doesn't need the basics explaining to them, but has got some quite deep, challenging questions when you get the more complex patients or you've got a little niche area. And that's like the perfect zone for us. And the perfect zone is not a great big topic like all of, you know, how to manage, menopause. It has to be a niche within that. And then those kind of mostly because of the allowances of space, but like a niche in that targeted that kind of GP, that kind of clinician who's got that level of knowledge, I would love to hear from you. You know, people who've got those, they should get in touch.
Yeah.
Send us an email. We're happy to guide.
Fair enough. And what about the analysis papers? Because often they're quite interesting in terms of a critical look at a specific aspect of general practice policy or research. And I know that you're interested to get more submissions on that angle as well.
Yeah, again, my personal view is, again, if you're involved in any kind of research or writing articles, or you're working in these areas, you should almost always be able to write an analysis article that we could publish. And I hope people will consider doing it, because, you know, whether it's a 2-page version or a 4-page version, you've got that, people have got that expertise, they've got that understanding, and they should be able to really, I know we've got some academics who are very good at it and understand that process, and we often get submissions from them. But I think so many more people could be doing it to improve their impact and influence of the work they do. One thing I should mention about analysis, and this is kind of like a heads up, it's in the pipeline. And one of the things that we've struggled with over the years with the BJGP is to publish service evaluations and sometimes innovations in practice. We're working quite hard at the moment to create a new section, which will be very analysis-like. And it's probably going to be called something like Innovations in Practice. And it's going to be an opportunity to publish things some of the radical, not necessarily radical, but some of the innovations that are going on, developments in general practice, particularly when we consider the 10-year plan at the moment. It's an opportunity to publish those. There might be some audit data, some service evaluation data as part of that, and share good practice, good policy. And so we're creating a section of the journal where those can go in. We've got a little bit of work, so we're not quite there yet. But if you're doing something novel, important, you think valuable in your areas of primary care, we will very soon be, we're hoping to get that launched early part of next year. To give people an opportunity to bring forward, again, very much about influence, so that we can actually do a bit real world influence rather than just, it's not about pushing our impact factor up.
Yeah, fair enough. And I think that kind of section would really support GPs who might not be linked to an academic department, but as you say, are doing something innovative in practice, might not have a lot of experience of publishing research. But
and we're certainly going to create it so that it's relatively templated up. So you don't have to understand all the kind of the nuances and wrinkles of how to write an academic paper. We're going to try and make that as straightforward as possible. And I think that's right. It's aimed exactly at that kind of scholarly GP doing good work, who thinks what they're doing could be valuable to let other GPs and other primary care systems people know about. And that's probably been a slight gap in our offering in past years, and we're trying to fix it.
Yeah, fair enough. So I wanted to take a bit more of a philosophical slant here and just get some of your reflections on general practice and primary care research as a whole. And how do you think this role that you've taken on as BJGP editor has shaped your view of research or your clinical practice? How is it making an impact in other areas?
I think it's hard to say. My reflections on general practice in general are kind of... I mean, I come from a particular perspective, I guess, and it's hard not to have it in mind when I'm working clinically. One of the things that's probably about myself is I've never been a GP partner. And that's probably an important declaration, because I do have some comments about GP partnership at times. Right. That I can, you know, I'm broadly a supporter, but I can see some serious flaws in the model at points that worry me, that we are kind of wedded to it in a way that is a barrier to future change. And I think there was an article, in fact, from the RCGP saying, you know, recently from Camilla Hawthorne, the chair, saying that how important the partnership model is, but we've got to be able to develop it for the future. Mm-hmm. I've never been a partner, and I've tended to work on the fringes a little bit, you know, out of hours care, drug and alcohol services, prison medicine. I was in the army in the past, so I've worked in a lot of kind of more fringy areas rather than, of course, I've done mainstream general practice as a salary GP as well. And so I'm not sure I can, that's perhaps more important in terms of what I have brought as BJGP editor rather than the other way around. And so it's influenced me in terms of trying to work hard as an editor to cover bits of general practice that don't otherwise get seen, and particularly related to inequalities as well. But it's just trying to find the bits of general practice that don't get good coverage. And sometimes, you know, I can think of numerous examples over the past few years where we've just not had a single article about sex. There was one where I think we had an editorial on sex work like a year or two ago, and I looked back and really couldn't find an article on that at all in the journal's archives going back, 60, 70 years, whatever it's been. So I really think that's kind of, in terms of my role as editor, I'm really very keen not to kind of ensure we cover those. So I guess that's it's a plea as well. If you're working in an area of general practice and you think it's had very poor coverage, it's not visible, get in touch again. I love having these conversations and hearing about them.
Yeah, and we often have issues focusing on inclusion health, and we had that focus on missingness from Andrew Williamson's team up in Scotland as well. So I think that's been really great to highlight, and I know that's influenced a lot of people who are thinking about that space as well.
Yeah, that's a good example. And I think we cover tons of the mainstream stuff as well, of course, all the regular practice.
Yeah,
but
sure.
Yeah, I'm keen to try to shine a light with the journal into the corners, which perhaps you just are easy to forget. And I guess that's perhaps because of my background in terms of where I've come from. So that perhaps has shaped my role as editor more. It's perhaps the other way around a little bit.
Yeah, fair enough. And I wanted to just go on to talk about sort of moments as an editor and maybe some good advice you've received and maybe advice for people who are submitting articles to the journal as well. You've just made a pitch for different people to submit things around maybe areas that we don't see very often or hear from, but any advice that you want to give to people? And
I've done whole talks on this before, but I've got I've got two or three bits of advice which I can give quickly. I think first of all, on the research side, I think we all have to understand that all research has got limitations in some shape or form. And if we do have to reject more papers than we can accept to the BJGP just purely because of capacity to publish. And if you get rejected, it's not personal. And it's always a bit challenging because we have to tend to point out the limitations and try to be as compassionate about that as possible when we are applying to authors. But generally, our role is to look at the limitations and work out if it's strong enough to take forward. But if you can not take it personally, that really helps. Because I understand it doesn't feel like that when you're immersed as a researcher.
We're very gutting.
Mindful. Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's really tough. And I think the other thing about any other article, whether it's editorial or an opinion article or analysis, is don't try to do too much. Almost all the articles we see that don't work are trying to do the whole of a topic or the whole of an area. And there are word limits for a reason. And online, just because we publish stuff online doesn't mean there aren't still word limits. Articles still have to be edited. And a lot of ours go into print, of course, as well. They're very key to impactful writing and strong writing is to get that focus right. So you've got to be prepared to edit stuff out, put it in a folder and save it for another article. But if you don't get that focus right, you end up with a muddy, confused, and the power of your message dwindles rapidly the more you try to include. So, you know, one single idea is always a good idea to good point to make, but it's almost always about focus with articles. You've got to just get the focus. You can't put it all into one. And if you can get that focus right, it makes an enormous those are the most powerful bits of writing, and they will absolutely fly. People will read them and they will change what people do as a result as well. So perhaps if I just went for a couple of bits of advice, that would maybe be in summary though. Don't take it personally, get the focus right. And you will enjoy a lot of success with us.
Yeah. And I think a lot of people's heads are full of a lot of different things that they're juggling. And I often think if I can pull one key thing out of an article that I remember, that's sort of, you know, that's the benefit of reading it. And I feel that way about a lot of the clinical practice articles. If there's one key thing I take away from it, then I feel like I'm winning.
One pet peeve as an editor is like that first paragraph, stop wasting it for people as well. Like academics are particularly guilty of just telling us what they're about to write about in the first paragraph. And I'm always a bit like, you know what, you could delete that whole paragraph.
We're going to find out, yeah.
Yeah, we will read it and find out. You don't need to tell us. Just get on in this editorial, we will do X, Y, and Z. No, just do X, Y, and Z. That's always my advice as well. You've got limited words. Use them.
Fair enough. Okay. So, I want to try and wrap things up, but any other things you want to talk about? You've got sort of a platform here to speak to all of the listeners on the podcast. Go for it.
Nothing is special, I would say, nada, to force down anyone's throat at this point. My main thing I would do is just encourage people to get in contact. We're considering even, you know, opening things up. But what I'd like to do is hear from people we wouldn't otherwise hear from. And BJGP editor at rcgp.org.uk, drop me an email. Be delighted to have a conversation.
Yeah, none of us are scary or difficult to contact. So yeah, drop a line. I think that's
yeah, absolutely.
Great advice. Okay, great. Well, thanks, Ewan. That's been a great chat. So just wanted to say thank you. And yeah, good to see you.
Thank you very much, Nada.
And thank you all very much for your time here and for listening to this BJGP podcast. And if you're interested in hearing more about current research in UK primary care, please do come and join us at the BJGP Research Conference. It's happening next year in Bristol on the 20th of March, 2026. And as Ewan mentioned, we're going to have a big focus on impact. The conference website is bjgp.org/conference, and I'll stick a link to it in the podcast notes as well. Thanks again for listening, and bye.